This is going to be an illustration in writing the line. Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And this is episode 179 of this bastard, and we are going to go in. We ride the line on this episode, and this is going to be one of those. We have multiple really incredible just like news stories that we're going to go into. We have some singles that, frankly, make me happy. Maybe I'll be a little biased and say like, of a really interesting week of news and music and all these different things. I think the singles are my favorite thing about a lot of things about this week, but definitely this week of the show in general. And of course, the albums, if you know the title you clicked on, we have a review of Justice by Justin Bieber, Chemtrails Over the Country Club by Lana Del Rey, Hidden Gems by the Blue Stones, and Now is a Long Time by Otsuki. We don't usually do four albums on Audio Face, but you know, we do this for the people. And for the stats, and so, and because there's a lot of interesting things we need to discuss. But first, let's do a little bit of a palate cleanser. Let's start with the appetizers here.
Yes.
We have Georgia Smith, an artist who we really love on classic episodes of Audio Face 2017, 2018. I remember songs like Teenage Fantasy, that entire album, Lost and Found, 2018. Amazing. Let me get that right.
Yeah.
It was really good. And so Addicted, I think, is like kind of like one of the first things we're hearing coming from her in a while, right?
Yes. I think it's a great track. It's her voice is still there. It's every like production, everything is a little bit different from what it was before a couple of years ago, because a couple of years before is a little bit slower compared, because halfway through Addicted, it like speeds up a little bit, but you still have the brilliant lyricism and stuff she has through it. It's very good. The hardest thing, you are not addicted. I'm hoping she's gonna. I believe she's gonna be releasing an album this year, from what I've read so far.
Yeah, I hope so. I've definitely wanted to get a little bit more music from her, and she's one of those artists who has taken a little bit of time.
She's taken a bit of time, but I mean, she's had a lot. I remember her last album. We both like adored it. We really, really liked it. So it's one of those where she's such a good artist. I want her to just. Wow, take her time with everything. And I'm glad, because so far for a single, this is what's more to come. I want more of it.
Yeah, absolutely. We then move on to the namesake herself, No Name.
No Name, yes.
With Rainforest. Turned a natural resource into a bundle of cash. Made the world anti-black, then divided the class. Now rich niggas is rich niggas with showbread. Really bitch niggas with big figures. Some cokeheads, these bitches is cokeheads. Man, fuck a billionaire. How you get closer to love? How you eliminate all your sadness when you open it up? How you make excuses for billionaires? You broken a bus. Sunny niggas around me rolling up and smoking me up. Because when Rainforest cries, everybody dies in love. Amazing track. So this came out in February, and I was telling Dan a little bit ago. I was like, "Hey, did we ever talk about this?
I don't think we did, because this song is hilarious, but like in a really good way.
Name kind of
thing. Yeah, exactly. So like, it's just spoken word style of rap and everything. Production very very rhythmic based. Lots of percussion throughout it. Good track. But then it's just, you know, typical anti-capitalist herself. No Name. I love the chorus. It goes, how do you get closer to love? How you eliminate all your sadness when you open it up? How you make excuses for billionaires you broke on the bus? Just hilarious. So just going in basically about stuff being, you know, African-American and overly racist society and stuff. And kind of going in on that, going in on class structure and everything in the track. But the thing with Rainforest is, at least for stuff that I've listened to in like my little indie circles, it's getting traction in a lot of indie ways. So it's getting play on a lot of indie stations and everything. I'm like, I remember hearing Rainforest maybe about a month ago. I go, okay, that's interesting.
That.
And now I hear it maybe like a couple of times a week now. So it's getting out there more to people, which is interesting, because I didn't think No Name would really be an artist for that, because hers is, I love her music, but I didn't think it'd be more mainstream in a way because of how polarizing her lyrics are.
Well, I mean, I definitely can see that. A, I think a lot of, well, definitely indie for sure, but there are a number of genres, definitely not a lot of, because country's its whole separate story. We've talked about Morgan Wallen more than enough on this podcast. Check out previous episodes for that. None here. But I think indie is one of those genres where we're seeing artists really come up who are, like, of color. We just did one, Genesis Owusu, who's, like, really bending that, like, line between indie and, like, rap, or indie and R&B. And it's just, like, really powerful in that way. So I think the overlap is there, and I think the acceptance of people of color in certain genres is definitely better, indie for sure, than others, country. But yeah, just No Name comes with more lyrics that are just fire, really pointed. I do remember of all of them, the Millionaire's lyric, and just like all those pointed things about like, basically she's going to be like, continue singing about this until millionaires are gone, which is wild. I love her. She's really good. That's why it's the No Name Woke Award.
Yes.
And now for a little bit of indulgence, we have the Lout EP by The Horrors.
Yeah, so this is the first big thing from The Horrors since their Album of the Year award winning on Audioface, album five, which is
2017 from the first Audioface Awards,
which I'm
blew us away.
I still listen to that album a lot. Love it.
Yeah.
EP, so you got three tracks, got Lout, Org, and Whiplash, and it is a bit different.
It's
a bit different than five. Sure. It's so Lout, that opening track is way more rocky. It's really like dystopian. It's very, very dark. All three tracks are way more dark compared to five, because Five, you'll get like little dark themes and stuff.
It's like, it makes it almost techno metal because the drums.
Yeah. It's that like industrial-ish metal for the opening track. The vocals and stuff have like a filter on it, so you can barely kind of understand it, but it's very different to what it is for that. But I did enjoy Lout. Then you get to Org, which is more of like your straight up experimental glitch electronic music, like just out of left field. And I'm like, this is insane, but I'm kind of with it.
I was like headbanging my body.
I was just like,
it's so good.
It's just like insane. Yeah. Concert, it actually, you know, please. What it reminds it, son of a bitch. What's that really crazy band or duo, I should say? Death Grips. Yeah. It reminds me a lot of Death Grips.
Interesting.
Which is just like, you know, that super glitchy, weird stuff where it's just not for everybody. But I'm starting to appreciate and like a bit more.
I want to stop you here because I think I understand what The Horrors are doing. And I think this is a band we really like. We've talked about one song that's on here. This is an EP. And this is a whole new sound that they're doing. And it's pretty cohesive as it goes together. These are some different vibes. But, you know, this is a new sound they're going for. And we know The Horrors can do this. These are probably three songs off of an upcoming album or project.
Yes.
And we have a singles rule that we've had to be very strict about for a reason, especially with artists we like. So this is a practice in accountability. And
so
we Lout
and Org, that's it. I'm not going to talk about Whiplash, even though I really want to.
Yeah, bro, I really want to.
I really want to talk about that.
I even had to like stop like halfway through Whiplash when I realized, oh, fuck, we have the rule. But this is likely, if we're predicting this correctly and not getting disclosured, but that means that
if we're not getting gorillas.
Well, not getting disclosure in the sense of they release an EP that is like cohesive on its own, but it's like, by the way, our whole album doesn't really sound like that.
Yeah.
But hopefully, assuming that this is just not like five-dimensional chess, and assuming this is a little bit of a new album sound, again, like Georgia Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wow, all of our 2017 like freshman year classes.
I know, we're coming back.
It's nostalgia, baby. So yeah, those are the new singles we've picked for this week. If you want us to review other singles, there are a lot of ways you can get in contact with us. Reach out to us on Twitter at AudioFacePod. Reach out to us on Instagram at the same handle, AudioFacePod. What do you know it? Our YouTube channel is also youtube.com/AudioFacePod. We keep the branding pretty consistent there. I like to do that. And that's just really helps us grow the show. It helps us really understand what y'all want us to do and listen to, and it makes the show fun. Generally speaking, bonus episodes of Audioface are really great. Our State of Music 2021 conversation released last week, and those are really good episodes. We talk about a really broad-reaching conversation. I think it was actually one of our best conversations ever, at least structure-wise. So let's see how the predictions go of how the music industry turns out. I love that since the Grammys were delayed, it dropped on the day after the Grammys. So it was like a nice shadow response to it. But definitely check that out. We did a Doom episode, bonus episode earlier this year. And by the way, we're doing a Daft Punk bonus episode later this week. We're very excited about that. Check that out. We're really going to like it. It's excited for you. We have even more bonus episodes set up for the future because we're going to do our anniversary episode sometime in May, at least for like the year thing. So we got a couple things on your sleeve, up our sleeves here. But make sure you follow Audioface for all those things. Power Report, we did an amazing episode because obviously a really big story that happened in America this week was the killing in Atlanta of like all those people, six of them being Asian women, and the sort of that in the contextualization of a rise in violence of Asians and Pacific Islanders throughout like North America and throughout the world. And so I was able to talk to two Canadian journalists who are Asian women who are like had really good perspectives about these things on Power Report. It's a new episode. It's up now. You can check that out at powerreport.world. That's a website you can go to for all the links. And I think it's a really good episode. Also, I go in on New York, the state of New York's most powerful family. So you don't want to check that out. I have so many receipts. It's amazing. I was laughing when I was making that episode. I'm like, gotcha. And then Thank Dan It's Friday, my Twitch stream that has been on hiatus for a little while. It's coming back, goddammit. I am on a warpath and it's going to be back this Friday, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. I'll get some plans for them. I'll have some plans for them. Some news will happen and I'll talk about it. It'll be cool. But that's all the plugs. Make sure you're just checking us out. We appreciate it and we appreciate you. Let's go into the news. So, wow.
In a friend of the show, Kanye West.
Yeah, I am realizing that I just set up this entire show to get mad in a week when I'm already mad. I'm going to roll with it, but there's a line. Okay, so there was a thing happening in the media world where Kanye West, it was reported by, I believe, Bloomberg, a very reputable magazine with relevant articles and topics that very much understand the way financial markets work.
Yeah.
Never mind the owner. Now I'm going to get into the Democratic rat fucking. This was reported that his net worth was accumulated to $6.6 billion. And this led to a number of different reactions, some of which are very funny. I think No Name's Why We Worshipping Billionaires lyric is somewhat can be interpreted in past tense as a reference to the idea that people were celebrating, what is it? They were celebrating Kanye West, essentially, for the fact that he had become a rich black person, even though he had just tried to run this campaign and work with Trump and do all these different things. Yep. Like, what are you even doing with your money? Why are we celebrating this? When it's like, he's completely far gone from the cause, or bare minimum is like not getting himself the mental health treatment he needs. But nevertheless, you had people who were like taking this thing for face value. When everyone knows that like most of these billionaire things are ridiculous, once I'm like relevant enough to be relevant or something, we're going to get to laugh and see like how many like all the predictions for my net worth, and we'll get to giggle at like how wildly inflated they are. It'd be like, it's including all the Soros checks I got from TYT that I still like I haven't seen yet. It's like all of those would be in there for some reason. Nevertheless, Forbes... which itself inflates numbers, is saying that the real number is closer to about $1.8 billion. And that kind of deflated everyone. But it kind of just goes to show there's this entire madness over what? The idea that Kanye West, whose life is currently in shambles, is making a news cycle over the fact that he reached what figure? What billions of dollars through? I mean, yes. There was that time where he was like at the low point where he was begging Mark Zuckerberg for money a while ago.
Yeah, because he's saying, I'm broke and all this. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, but then he signed the Adidas deal. He's doing the Yeezy Gap thing. His music's going, I mean, Sunday Service is going so well for him that he's forgetting to pay the people who work for him. But apparently well enough that he's able to buy some of his musician friends like literal tanks. Like,
oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, like there's a lot to be said about a media complex, not to be too hashtag no politics, that puts a lot of attention towards this grossly, wildly unestimated figure as though it's like dangling a carrot in front of its readers. As though like, this could be you if you just like
Get off the pedal.
What? Are you like wild? Like, I just don't know. I don't know what the whole point of it is, but I think it's just sort of like a sad commentary on things. Sorry.
Maybe Kanye's hanging out too much with Elon Musk, so.
Yeah, it's a crowd thing. It's a crowd thing.
It really is. Moving on.
Yes.
First album review of the day, we've got Justice by Justin Bieber.
We listened to Justin Bieber's newest album, Justice, 15 songs, 45 minutes long, so you don't have to.
Yes.
So, for those who don't know what this is, you're about to find out. Strap in. This is garbage. This made me genuinely angry, and...
it made me angry. I was just like, this is pretty trash.
I'm going to go in for the headshot right now. In the middle of this album is an MLK interlude.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That is just completely out of context, non-contextual thing of Martin Luther King speaking about like holding true to your convictions. And the last word of the speech happens to be justice. And then it kicks off a song called Die For You. Again, I have to show restraint, but for Justin Bieber to be a musician who has been in his career, he had his childhood screw-up phase. He had his, I'm going to befriend black people and then say the black lifestyle is bad for me phase. He had his drug phase, and now he's in his come-to-Jesus phase. Sure. But can you not be such a dumbass while you're doing it? Like, can you not be so blatantly idiotic while you do it? Like...
Well, too much starts
off. Never mind, the whole thing sounds like hot garbage,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Like, it starts off too much where it has an interlude thingy, similar to them. Okay, interlude for the first, like, 20 seconds or so. I'm like, okay, well, this is interesting to see how you're going to do with this. And then it's just a bland pop, slow pop song. Same thing for Deserve You, kind of a bland, slow pop song. As I Am featuring Khaled. Khaled is an artist I'm slowly getting disappointed by every time he's getting featured on anything or any time that he releases his own work. He started off
He's like a Tinder date that stops giving an effort after the second go.
He started off really hot, you know, doing the Disclosure thing, doing a couple other things that were pretty solid. And then his album that we reviewed a while back, we didn't really like. We thought it was bland. And every feature he's been on since has been pretty shit. And this one is pretty shit because it's as if it's a ripoff of a crappy Chainsmokers song.
Yeah, Khaled got a bunch of awards and then all of a sudden got a little bit, like, I guess, lackadaisical, lethargic with
that's
his music.
The best
and
way
now he's
say.
On Justin Bieber music, just like putting in easy little... What is it like? Easy little features here and there to make the bank, whatever, to pay off for the Beamer. Take me with the good and the ugly. Say I'm not going anywhere. Take me as I am. Swear I do the best I can. Say I'm not going anywhere. Did you actually get to listen to the whole thing? I don't know if you did.
No, I tried. It just was very uninspired. It's just bland. All this stuff, I just couldn't get over the MLK interlude like yourself. It's just...
Because again, like, if... Okay, so if Justin Bieber were trying to make some, like, come to Jesus, but also unite this with racial justice sort of thing, I don't think Justin Bieber's the guy to make that, but this is an entirely different conversation here.
Yeah.
But this is an album but full of the same generic, like, pop love songs that Justin Bieber's been making since he was 13.
Exactly.
With not really much context or growth whatsoever, except maybe only one song has an E next to it. And, like, other than this, like, performance come to Jesus thing after he's, like, been an asshole publicly for, like, most of his adult career... Like, again, this isn't the sort of, like, reputation building I've looked in myself introspectively thing that we've seen from other artists when they've tried to do this.
Mm-hmm.
This is just crap. It's garbage. I don't know who this is feeding besides, like, fans or people who, like, look for all of these certain features of artists. But, like, it's just
I mean,
it's
you have
crap.
Holy
shit.
With Chance the Rapper, who I swear he's just an industry plant at this point because his rap is crap and... Everything he's featured on is very overrated. I don't think he's good at all compared to, you know, you've got your Kendricks and Anderson Paaks of the world. But the weight that we love in the night gave me life, baby, I can't explain. And the way you hold me, hold me, hold me, hold me, hold me. Feel so holy, 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 holy. Oh God, running to the altar like a track star. Can
another second. There's a way you hold me, hold me, hold me.
And it's, again, it's just really bland song, and it doesn't really have much substance or anything. I feel like you're trying too hard to make a statement, but you're falling so flat on your face with it that you're making a fool of yourself with it, honestly.
So, real fucking embarrassing, I'll just say that.
Kicking
trash cans. And you know, we'll say that because Justin Bieber is a little bit of a hockeyer himself.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah, exactly. No, Toronto Maple Leaf fan.
I have stories about Justin Bieber playing hockey that I probably shouldn't share on this podcast, but I'll share them when we're in a break for...
Good man, I want to hear these.
The ears of you and Peter only.
Good man, good man.
But yeah, don't listen to this, please.
It's bland. If you're a Justin Bieber fan, sure, you'll like it. Whatever you like, anything they put out, fuck.
Yeah, but, I'm like, if you're a Justin Bieber fan, I'm sorry that this music is good to you. I'm sorry that you don't reach out to this, and I'm sorry that you have not, like, branched out and seen anything, like, beyond this for the past, like, 20 years or so. But maybe, like, once quarantine gets over, like, walk outside and get a damn clue.
Not good.
Arbitrary scale this week is disgraced alt-right shock jocks. Sean, take the lead.
This is, so you know, for those of you who don't know the arbitrary scale is arbitrary on purpose because rating scales for music has way too many variables that doesn't make sense. So we just like making a scale that doesn't make sense the entire time of our podcast for you new listeners.
We're a lean in kind of podcast. If you want to rail on us, there is a comment section below. So have at it, Hoss.
This is a solid Milo Yiannopoulos getting disgraced and being so disgraced that you try to shill for conversion therapy to try to convince yourself that you're not gay while you are gay and you friend zoned your own husband. Because that's how shit your life has become. And that's what this album is.
Yeah, like, he's doing this for attention. Saying that he's, like, un-gay.
And he's doing
conversion therapy. I've seen
my mistakes of the past. I can do better now.
Because everyone else will see the grift. Except people who make money off of these kind of conversion stories. And it's a really tragic thing. Except
it's
the fact
so
that
Miley
Yiannopoulos is one of the most dreadful human beings on earth who has like threatened people's lives for fun and like made publicity stunts out of people's educational careers. Anyways, while we're on the topic of Justin Bieber's pretty ridiculous Waste of Our Time album, there's a really interesting thing about the way the album cover looks because it was going to be designed a little bit of a different way with a little bit of a different logo that emphasized the T a little bit more for being like a religious symbol and looked a little bit too much like a certain dance duo that isn't Daft Punk and it isn't Disclosure. It happens to be Justice. And they are
and
very
one,
good
one
and
they
are very litigious.
One of the most legendary dance duos, Justice. Yes. Because they've always used crosses and stuff in all their artwork, any of their things for two plus decades
yeah.
or so. Yeah, I guess they put a cease and desist on it, I'm pretty sure, right?
Yeah. Aside from seeing it all over the internet ourselves, this is Tyler Goldberg, who is one of the managers for Justice, essentially. We heard from hundreds of people throughout the day, industry people, Justice fans, the Justice guys received a ton of messages, not only compared to point out the similarities between the Justice Justin Bieber album, but confused, quote, is this a Justice collaboration? Which would be a good point, because considering the ringer that we just put that album through, rightly so, because it is bad, I think a Justice collaboration with Justin Bieber would either have to be very lucrative, or it just, like, wouldn't make sense. Like, it's, like, obvious rumor mill stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, so they definitely sent a cease and desist letter, and apparently they want to connect with the designer and... I guess, talk about it, but it's just like, listen, our logo looks like this. Don't make it look like this, or else we'll break ankles.
Pretty much.
It's just like,
and it is, and looking at it where it's Justice the Cross, you can honestly see if you're a Justice fan, you're like, wait, what?
Yeah. Like,
and Justice are pretty big, too. It's not like a small little niche thing.
They're a big group that's been around longer than
Bieber's
Justin
alive,
Bieber,
probably.
Me, and you have been alive.
Yep.
So, like, it's kind of ridiculous. Moving on, completely out of Bieber talk.
Completely random. But
Lou Ahrens, maybe you haven't heard of him, but maybe you've heard things because of his creation. He's dead at the age of 94, and he helped create the cassette tape.
And he also helped the compact disc.
Yeah, well. So CDs, cassette tapes.
Yes.
These are like old, like physical medium formats for music. But
hipsters know what we're talking about.
Yeah, hipsters absolutely know what we're talking about.
You gotta roll that shit all the way back, play from the beginning, do-do-do. And then if it gets out, you're screwed. And then you gotta re-put it up. And if it gets cut, then you can't use it anymore.
Yeah, if you have a really old car, you have this like cassette tape to aux adapter.
Oh, Lord.
Super sketchy. The tape's always messing up.
Yes.
It's a miracle it even works. But yeah, he passed away peacefully in his home in Belgium. He's a Dutch engineer and... He got his start in the industry when he joined Philips in 1952. And basically just from there, led a team to developing the first tape recorder.
That's crazy. He had such a big impact on the music industry. It's just insane.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's still bands who are hipsters, like, releasing things on cassette tape, just sort of the aesthetic pleasure of it. So
Aesthetic.
And speaking of releasing things for the hipster aesthetic pleasure.
Abel himself, The Weeknd, he's reissuing his debut mixtape, House of Balloons, for the 10th anniversary. And he's also including all of like the original mixes and samples, all the stuff completely intact. Which is actually, I like it when artists do that because then you can kind of see the construction, the way they do it. And then other people can go in and kind of mess with their own stuff too to get like different samples and kind of mess with it too. I always like when artists do that. So.
Yeah. Definitely an expensive way to go.
It's very
oftentimes
expensive.
Because clearing those things are not easy to do.
But Abel can afford that shit. He spent like $5 million of his own money on that Pepsi halftime show.
The NFL reached for its wallet and Abel was like, I got it.
He's like, I got the check.
I got the check.
Don't worry about it. He got that black Amex card like, right here, boys.
The one that chips tables when it drops. Damn, okay, but yeah, good for him. You can check that out. Let me see the date that it is coming out. It's a limited edition vinyl that is only coming out in...
First off, that's crazy that's only been... He started 10 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, it's available actually right now at the time of recording, about an hour ago. So almost certainly sold out at this point. But at least it... is going to, I think, exist on streaming platforms. So you'll get to hear it that way.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Check it out. If you're a Weeknd head, it'll be cool to do that.
Yeah. Still, you can convert Dan.
And next up on the album review, Gauntlet, we have Lana Del Rey's Chemtrails Over the Country Club.
It's
11 songs, 45 minutes long. And we listened to Lana Del Rey's Chemtrails Over the Country Club, so you don't have to. Way to begin. We should begin with the beginning. Why is she doing this, like, raspy, quiet thing? I'm sure she has a reason. I'm sure it's like, it's a very deep reason, and you only understand it because you won't understand it because I'm me, and I'm a woman. And I understand this because I'm a white woman. I only see race in black and white, only on the cover I have with my friends. And that makes me very woke. I've read a lot of books that I won't let you know that I've read, but these are books that I've read. Wanderlust. Okay, but like, I don't know why she's doing the thing. It doesn't sound great. It's just like very gimmicky.
So
and it's not even much of a, like, I'll stop. It's like not much of an evolution from like anything I've really heard from her before.
Going back, we reviewed Norman fucking Rockwell last year. It was okay, except the fact that when she did the Sublime cover, that when during the music video, when she said qualified to represent the LBC, she was standing in the middle of Venice. I will never forgive you for that. And then second off, so for this, the thing with the raspy voice thing, I don't mind it if it's one piece. Like, example, my favorite rapper, 21 Savage. He does that whisper thing once in a blue moon. Every once in a while, it's fine. When you do it for 80% of the album, and you have a good voice.
Go on, you're making it through 80%, mate.
And you have a good voice... It just detracts from everything else, and it's bad. And White Dress was a terrible opening for it because it just sounds like you've been smoking Marlboro Reds for 28 years.
Well, listen, wanted to get the idea out of my mind that I felt listening to the single that this was going to be like one of the ultimate stinkers of Audioface. But to give Lana Del Rey credit, I skipped like through White Dress, like to just like making maybe the first song's garbage. I'll go through it. Chemtrails Over the Country Club, I skipped again because I heard already because it's garbage.
Yeah, but yeah. It's okay. Chemtrails Over the Country Club, that's a decent Lana track. Like, it's okay. Like, that's a solid, like, reverting back to kind of her older style it sounds. But then the rest of it is not that great, honestly. I'm trying to give her the benefit of the doubt. Like, disregarding all of this stuff that we've talked about with her before, that we, her politics and everything else is terrible because she doesn't, she thinks she knows way more than she does. But anyways, getting to the actual music of it. So you got Tulsa Jesus Freak, hilarious title. Song, not that great. It's again, like, it has, she's doing that raspy thingy where it doesn't sound that great for the production that she's doing. Because you have other female artists that can do that. Bjork, she does that, she's done that a few times. But because the production of it is, it's very washed out with the vocals, you can't have the vocals be a primary thing when you're doing an effect of that caliber, because then it just detracts from everything else that's going on the track, with the lyrics, with the theme of everything. That's all you're going to be hearing.
Yeah,
which is a big problem.
And the production, for what it's worth, has never been like horrible.
No, the production is good. That's what I'm trying to get at. It's so distracting when you have that. The vocal filter, and plus on top of just trying something different, which I give, okay, fine, you tried something different, but don't do for 80% of a record like that, especially the whispery voice, because we have talked about it before. Because after Tulsa Jesus Freak, right, you have Let Me Love You Like a Woman, which that's probably the one time where she actually like gauges her vocals in a range and everything, and that was one of the few songs I could sit through and listen to the entire thing and be like, okay.
Do, I can't see myself having any fun, so let me love you like a woman, let me hold you like a baby, let me shine like a diamond, let me be who I'm meant to be, talk to me in song.
Then after that, you get Wild at Heart, and it's fine. It's just bland because then you're getting more into these piano slow tracks, and that's the whole thing with the album. It's very, very slow. There's not much substance to it. That's empty at heart. And,
listen, I understand lifelong cul-de-sac girls need music too. All right, but like I'm just gonna cut to the chase. There are songs
then go
like,
in.
Not All Who Wander Are Lost, right? And it's just like the most.
There's too much time to think about seasons of old as you pour yourself a drink. Cause every time I said no, it wasn't quite what I mean, if you know what I mean. You say you got my name as you did too.
I guess music is supposed to take you to some place of escapism or something like that, but this is music that takes you to a place devoid of like the everyday realities outside of being a white person living in a cabin by yourself with all of your like very close-knit circle of friends, completely devoid of like the world around you. Because like, not that your entire album has to be political or like slightly political,
no,
but you're gonna taunt and like be this person and constantly deflect all of these things when it's like you're being really tone deaf here. These are all these like criticisms that are valid. It's like what music does. It makes people sort of talk and critique about it and say, what does this art make me feel? And a lot of people are just like, this is meant to be an expression of something, and I don't know if this expression is like fully like adapted considering like your voice and the way you're talking about it. And all her response is only to dig in deeper and create something that is like if you watered down mayonnaise with milk, it's just like this sort of like level of bland and like used it as pulp for paper. It's just so bad.
It's not good because the thing with Lana, her earlier works.
It's so unrelatable. It's just like really unrelatable too.
Very, very
unrelatable. Like I struggle to relate broadly with the kind of person who really relates to many of the experiences in these songs. And like, I understand like there's a lot of difference in like me and Lana Del Rey, but like, there are white women artists who can make music that is like very like relatable in a lot of different broad ways.
Fuck,
to myself.
We relate way more than Taylor Swift's Folklore than we do with this.
Thank you for remembering that, because there was a song on Folklore that was like the last great American dynasty
Great American Dynasty.
And it was an interesting way of like talking about like, not like you're like I'm a white person, I'm like, fuck the entire thing. Like, you're not like destroying it, but like, you're commenting on it in a way that's very self-aware that I was very surprised
That's relatable.
Yeah.
She made an album, as much as we gave her shit before, she made an album that was very relatable in different ways. And she tried something different and everything within her range and everything and made a decent album that we both enjoyed. And this is just completely putting blinders on to anything around you, but the thing with Lana now getting outside the music, now getting to her as an artist, is the thing that she keeps shooting herself in the foot is by all of the controversies that she gets into, she keeps sticking herself bigger and bigger into this hole because she keeps trying herself to be someone that she's not. Trying to say, hey, I know these, I'm a giant feminist. I can do all of these things to be politically aware and all of this. And every time I'm like, okay, let me see what happens in your music. Let's see what happens. And it's not. It's the same old thing that Norman fucking Rockwell. It's just really, really bland, no substance, no self-awareness at all, to where not many people can relate to it. Lana Stans will probably like it naturally, but I even saw some Lana Stans were like, they wanted her to revert now to kind of her older style and older sounds because they don't necessarily like the direction they're going.
A lot of the sound that Lana Del Rey had that was older, I wouldn't say it was like a predecessor to like the indie sort of like uprising you're having like right now, but there's a lot of similarities.
There's good stuff.
And Lana Del Rey like took that sound to like a popular like constraint. Yes. Like, yes. Yeah, I'd accept it being a little bit popular, or I'd accept it being folkier, because even then, a lot of the instrumentals in here are not like terrible.
No, but the production is fine.
Again, like with Justin Bieber, you've been around for a minute. Grow a little, right?
Yes.
Like combined, like when you take the music combined with the way she behaves as an artist, which is why like I'm most likely not going to listen to any more of her albums again or review them on this podcast, is that in addition to lacking, like, not only in like the defense of like valid criticism that, yeah, sometimes it's difficult because you're like a public figure and sometimes it comes to shitty.
Yeah, naturally.
But like sometimes there's truth in that. You can be introspective and think of how that is.
Yeah.
Instead of you're overcompensating for the criticism, because you're not trying to do the inward work for yourself and doing it a little bit, maybe it's a little bit slow, but just like try. It doesn't come off as this is someone who's awkwardly working through things.
Yeah.
It comes off as someone who's like the kind of person who's upset that everyone's paying attention to racial injustice posts on Instagram and no one's liking their beach pics anymore. It's just like, it is completely like vain and out
Another
of touch
thing
with the world.
It, and then going back to the music, with the album, it gets to like out of a level zone here for people who are on camera, but like it's a zone chart of 0 to 10. It gets to like a level 2 and it stays at a level 2 the entire album. And there's not much variancy within each track as well. So that's the other thing too.
It can be a soft album. Give us some 4s and 3s and 1s.
Exactly.
Ones,
Folklore. She did, Taylor Swift did that. She would go up, down, side, side a little bit, change it up with it, the tracks, but still make it a little bit softer. You can do that. It's very easy to do that. But no, not good.
Not good.
Not good.
Stinker. Not the worst album we reviewed on Audioface.
There are many, many way worse things we've reviewed. Fall Out Boy, I'm still my favorite worst album I've ever listened to, because I listened to it for 2 seconds. I'm like, I can't do this.
But I'll definitely say for an artist I like didn't really like or care about to begin with, it still managed to like disappoint me even. And maybe we'll get to a redemption of that a little bit later. But first up, the arbitrary scale this week, as we talked about, is disgraced alt-right shock jocks. And I'm giving this Caitlyn Bennett.
Boo Boo Bennett
Gun
himself?
Girl. Yeah.
I was going to give this to Steven Crowder, but I think Boo Boo Bennett's good too.
Yeah, in between adult diapers and heart palpitations, I think I'm just going to put it between that. Yes, yeah. I'm going with low blows, but these are both people who are outwardly racist and would prefer the genocide of people who look like Sean and I, so screw them. Lightly.
So, speaking of Lana Del Rey, though, so she's going to release another album this year, apparently, and she vows to get revenge with her next album called Rock Candy Sweet, because she says that, oh, she had all these accusations of copyright appropriation, glamorizing domestic abuse and stuff over chemtrails over the country club, which we just talked about. And please don't. It's going to be released June 1st. Fuck my life. I don't want to do it.
And like, so here's the thing. Lana Del Rey has a history of, I put a lot of my Lana Del Rey criticism in the previous review, so I'm going to try to move past that. I want to be in a better mood for the rest of what we're recording today.
Because we got better news coming up.
But Lana Del Rey announced Chemtrails Over the Country Club basically the day that Norman fucking Rockwell came out.
Yes.
All right? And then Chemtrails got delayed about half a year.
Because of COVID and other stuff.
So, again, if I'm building... This is the only thing I like dig back into from the previous reviews you could check out before this. If I'm building a broad sense of the character of Lana Del Rey, who has existed as an artist for a long time, even in a quote, she says, just want to say thank you again for the kind articles like this one for reminding me that my career was built on cultural appropriation and glamorizing domestic abuse. I will continue to challenge those thoughts on my next record, June 1st, titled Rock Candy Sweet. It's like, this is such a babyish reaction to it.
Girl, you said my pussy tastes like Pepsi Cola. You like that was one of your first things you put out there. So,
there's a lot to go into a lot of Lana Del Rey's lyrics. I'd preferably have not liked to right now, but
that's a line I'll never forget. The first time I heard that song in high school, I think. I go, what the fuck?
And even in the last album, there was like. Stuff about like I was young and I was in a boardroom full of men and music and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
there's
like
right.
That's like the beginning of the previous album. So yeah. Like again, like if
shoot yourself in the foot every time.
And I'm the first to point out on Audioface on other ventures that I do on the Dan from the Internet universe that the media like needs to exist as a machine and feed itself. But knowing that, understanding that, especially as an artist, when you are above that machine, you. Feed things to the machine, you could choose to not feed things to the machine. Or you could choose to feed smarter things to the machine that lead you in the right or light. So, like, there's only so much blame of the machine, the media, she can do at this point when she knows what's happening. And again, when I'm it's building this whole character about her, as in, like, is she well-meaning and just, like, horribly misstepped all the time? Or is she a bit of a tone-deaf, like, low-key racist? I have a little more evidence here and there.
Yes.
God.
All right. Moving on so Dan doesn't, like, break his computer out of anger.
Yeah. It's been a very long week, and I think a lot of people will understand that for a number of different reasons. But now let's turn things
around. So we've got, next album review, we have...
Hidden Gems by the Bluestems. It is 10 songs, 39 minutes long, and it's a pure, clean, wholesome alternative rock.
This is a very, very solid alt-rock album. I enjoyed it. Whoa. Pickups. I enjoyed it a lot because something that, you know, as someone who's listened to a lot of alt rock and stuff throughout the years, with artists that have come out, like example, like the Black Keys with Let's Rock that came out maybe 2 years ago now. A lot of alt rock that's been coming out has reached like a level and it'll kind of get sustained there throughout the album. And going back to that, like out of 10 scale of like your roller coasterness of an album, it would get to like a 6 or 7 and it would stay there the entire time. The thing with Bluestones is they changed a lot throughout this whole album, which is great for a genre that is still struggling in my eyes. It's slowly getting back on its feet. You have a couple great albums last year and a couple other good works earlier this year that are getting up. Lights On starts off like perfectly at that like 7 level of a great alt rock song, like just getting out to it. Then Shaking Off the Rust is getting more into that like experimental ish of that alt rock.
Now I'm shaking off the rust.
People now are doing more like fuzzy basses, like doing things that like Muse tried out in 2012, but no one really caught on too much and stuff that I enjoyed.
I'm brewing on to a Muse bonus episode that needs to be made soon.
We do. Like, I want to talk about the Second Law. Everybody hates the Second Law. I really enjoy
including
it.
Including me, but more on that.
Well, more on that in like a couple months or something like that. But anyways, so, and then something that was interesting to me was One by One, then after Shake Off the Rock, One by One is completely different. It's like it stops, it slows down, then it gets into percussion, and it gets more into that indie alt-rock scene. So three very different songs to kind of start off an album, which is fresh in my eyes because you get more of that modern rock sound, which I've been wanting to hear more and more for. And this is something I said in the music industry episode that we released last week, that is, alt rock can exist. It's getting out more and more, but you have to change it up. And if people start changing it up and stuff and doing different things and using all the tools that are at their disposal, you can make a good album. And One by One was a great track for that because it breaks up that album. After that, you've got Careless, a couple others, which then, again, are slowing down a little bit and getting to more of that percussion stuff, almost like pop rockish, I'd like to say, for those where it's a couple different sounds get in there, but it's good.
Yeah, I like Careless quite a bit.
It won't change a thing. It's just careless, we just don't think. I don't want to start a fight. I don't want to start a fight this time. Just let me keep the mood right. On topic all night this time. With the music in your head, it don't sound the same to me. Just let me hear your body sing. Let your hips swing.
Because yeah, if it's slower, you get a couple different sounds in there, like you said. And I don't, you know me, I tend not to gravitate towards slower songs. But I think this has like a really good, almost
good.
Like you mentioned, 2012, 2013's era, Black Keys-ness era to it. Like it's a smooth groove aspect to it that adds some little tinges of the, distorted guitar, distorted bass that you're talking about. I really like that combination.
Yeah, it's interesting because with the start of Lights On, I'm like, okay, let's see what happens. I like this track, but let's see if it just stays there the entire time. It definitely does it. This album has so much variety for it. And for being the length it is, it's a perfect length for it too, where everything on here flows. Everything has a theme. Everything has a meaning on it. You got Grim afterwards, which then gets back to like that solid alt rock sound after it's slowing down. Perfect placement of that song too. So a great effort.
Yeah. I do have a little bit of criticism with this album is that like within the 40 minutes, I do feel like within the slight push of 2012 to 2013 alternative rock, I do feel like my appetite's been wet too much by the indie world. Like I've seen so much creativity just blown up out there. That this, like coming back to it, just feels a little bit like I'm going back to it. Like there's some bangers on here, don't get me wrong.
Like LA Afterlife.
I think I died and woke up in LA.
I'm actually like, I need a moratorium on songs made about Los Angeles.
Please.
Stop.
Yes.
The influences
like, you've
are getting
got out of Haim, you've got Haim, you've got The Weeknd. If you have this one, you have so many artists saying LA, this and that. I'm like, please.
Perhaps Kanye's last good opinion was no more parties in LA. Just get the hell out of my city. No more influencers. Get off my freeways.
No more influencers.
There's a whole thing about influencers like moving and everything. And damn it, please move. Please keep moving.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like fine enough. I like that Spirit again takes things down to a really light thing. I really like the Blue Stones' like slower songs. It's a really interesting thing.
And even like their rockier songs like LA Afterlife, it slows down towards like the middle of the track and everything picks back up. So it's not just, that was my issue with the Black Keys with its rock. It was just that for 40 minutes plus of just staying here instead of going down, up and around and changing out your rhythm, changing out your each track having its own independent thought and whatnot. So it's a very, very good alt rock album. I'm quite impressed with this.
Yeah. It's really good. I think Make This Easy and Oceans ends really nicely.
Yes. Oceans is a very good ending.
Yeah, 5 minute long, like really nice track.
Yes. So you know, coming from like Kings of Leon, which a lot of people didn't like Kings of Leon's album. I don't know why, but a lot of people had problems with it, which they're high or some shit. Who knows? Maybe not the good kind of high.
Yeah.
But
let's not disparage high like that.
But anyways, this year we've had two very solid alt rock albums already, which is good for the genre. That's a genre that's been hurting a lot for a while now. But overall, fantastic album for from the Blue Stones.
Yeah. I think this is their second album, and it's a really solid one out of that. Yeah, the previous one was Black Holes in 2018, which got a decent amount of acclaim from there.
Yes.
But
If you like alt rock and stuff, especially that like that mid early 2010 sound or so, you'll really enjoy this because it modernizes that, which not too many people have. Incubus did that last year with their Trust Fall Side B album or EP, and so slowly getting back, which is great. Yeah.
Middle school me is very happy about this time in music because alternative and indie are very exploratory. They're changing different things. They're sounding a little different things. It's like a, I don't know what, how long these genres are going to last more broadly. Indie, I have a little bit more help and longevity more than indie, like rock and alternative. But like, this is a great hurrah moment that's happening right now.
Yes, a revival.
Yeah. Well, let's be optimistic and call it a revival.
Yes.
Arbitrary Scale this week, as y'all know we're doing, Disgrace Alt-Right Shock Jocks. And it's very interesting on here because it's easier to sign these people to albums you don't like. But, I'll give this one to something that's just like, you know, like an old favorite that comes back, like surfaces up again. Let's go this Dan Bongino.
Dan Bongino?
Because he's starting to be like, he's considered to be the heir apparent to Rush Limbaugh, he's very much not. Like Tucker Carlson's like, Rush Limbaugh walked so Fox News could run.
Yes.
And Tucker Carlson is riding Fox News.
Yes.
He's the king right
Sweet,
now.
Sweet Swanson money.
Yes. Tucker McNear Swanson Carlson.
Yes.
Baby. From the frozen food fortune. Look it up.
Yes.
Married into it, too, so he's not even a pureblood. Mm-hmm. So, like...
Damn muggle.
How are you... you rate this similarly?
I was going to give us a good old Bill O'Reilly, but I think, you know... Damn, what do you know about Bill O'Reilly? He's a pretty solid...
Lufa's in the chat.
Fuck.
Anyways.
Anywho's. Favorite streaming platform, Spotify?
Everyone's favorite streaming platform, Spotify. Reporting from Consequence of Sound, which is Randy Graves, hopes to have this new pay transparency website that will hopefully, I love how it's titled, make all those annoying protests go away.
Basically, the Stop Spotify protest, the Union of United Artists going up saying, Spotify, you need to pay us more, and you know, everything that we've been saying on this podcast for the past 4 years.
Yeah. So, reading from the article, the Loud and Clear website provides a high-level overview of how payments are distributed, while Big Green Circle declines to get specific. It does include some ballpark numbers, such as that it pays out about two-thirds of its earnings to right holders. More on them later. This is an audio face listener right here. This has to be.
The Big Green Circle. That's what I'm going to call Spotify from now on.
This has to be it. This audio face listener immediately.
100%.
These are some alarming statistics designed to put streaming numbers in context. For example, in 2020, about 13,000 artist catalogs generated at least $50,000 in royalties. Of those, approximately 7,800 catalogs earned more than 100,000 royalties, and 870 topped a million. So that's a lot of numbers for the podcast. That's basically, if you could picture a triangle, and I'm going to,
it's
like,
worse than the golf, dude. I thought golf had a disparity in, like, the pro ranks. Jesus.
So, the top 13,400 artists, which might be, like, many of the artists we like, make at least 50,000 royalties. So, to be fair. This is at least not average. Average is a big bullshit number because you can play around those at least. But at least that means like a low bar. I mean, $50,000 in a lot of places where artists tend to live is not living things. But if you roll that from a couple different, if you roll that from a couple of different platforms, maybe you can make all right.
Yeah, exactly. If you got your merch sales, if you got, you know, tickets and stuff from concerts, but concerts don't exist right now, so that's
more on that later.
Revenue shit.
Approximately 7,800 catalogs earned more than $100,000, so that's nice
solid
money. And then 870s, so that's a smaller number of that 7,800.
Your Drakes of the world.
Between 400. Your Taylor Swift's, your sadly Lana Del Rey's, topped $1 million.
Yes.
And they're talking about how they know everything about diversity. Blackface Drake. So Spotify, I'm going to go back to the article again. Spotify also includes graphs that show these numbers increasing over time. Let's see. I'm kind of going into some other here. So the part that's like more on that later is like here. Spend more than a few minutes using the Loud and Clear tools, and it's clear that there's less clear than meets the eye. Say the obvious, there's a huge difference between an artist earning $50,000 and an artist catalog garnering the same amount.
Yeah.
And that brings us back to the pesky rights holders. So the labels, the distributors, and aggregators that Spotify pays directly, those people are taking their cut as it goes along the chain, not going all the way down. So that's the whole point. Artist catalogs. Artists oftentimes don't own their music. And so these labels are taking their cuts. Now, Spotify did ancillarily to this, again, being overly fair to them, talk at one point about having a thing where they were going to have like artists directly upload to the platform. And so like oddly Spotify be the middle person, but if it's just the platform being the middle person, that's going to happen on SoundCloud or like Bandcamp or anywhere else most of the time. So then you don't have a label and you can represent yourself. You still have to do all the label work. Spotify's trying to help with that, but that doesn't really exist yet. And other platforms are trying to do the same. Honestly, I wouldn't trust Spotify to do it, but if SoundCloud or Bandcamp tried something like this, it would be awesome. But yeah, there's a handy dandy video on the website called How the Money Flows, which uses elevator music, relaxing voice, and PowerPoint quality visuals to make the case that artists signed a contract and are getting exactly what they deserve.
Nope.
This is where it gets kind of union busty sounding. And like, this is makes sense because there's justice at Spotify. There's a union of musicians and allied workers who've been pressuring Spotify to not only be more transparent about their like payments, which is stuff, yeah. This is a step towards, but there's still a lot being hidden. I think it's really excellently put out in this article. But artists need to get paid more. There's a larger piece of this pie. I'm going to try to look up like Spotify's revenue, because like right now I see that, or maybe like you could look that up while I continue reading this. Like, look up their revenue from 2020, like totally. In the streaming era, fans do not pay per song, so we don't believe in a per stream rate is a meaningful number to analyze, reading from their website. Instead, the company points to the $5 billion it paid out to rights holders in 2020 as evidence that Spotify generates more money for rights holders than any other streaming service. I think it's interesting.
$9.5 billion.
They made $9.5 billion.
Yeah. Spotify, it's 155 million paid users, 9.5 billion in revenue.
And they said they paid $5 billion out to rights holders. So,
rights holders?
So, again, that's to the people who hold the licenses. Yeah, so, eventually, like, a sliver of that $5 billion is going to artists. Yes. And when you go around the streaming services, that's not something to, like, balk out or be mad at. But you can see how that money becomes pennies very quickly for those 13,400 who they tried to prop up and say, look at this big number making this modest number. Hey, check this out. Look at what Spotify's doing. We're redistributing the wealth. We're goddamn socialists over here. Bringing Northern European socialism over to the masses. This is more smoke and mirrors from Spotify, so watch this space. We're going to be covering that.
Yes.
I spent a lot of time on Spotify, honestly.
You did. Now, this is a really somber shit story.
Yeah.
So Demi Lovato, she revealed in a documentary that she had reveals a sexual assault that she's had a couple of times throughout her life, and then admits to no longer being sober, which is really shit, which sucks. So I guess during, like, she criticized Rihanna for the whole Chris Brown thing and whatnot, so she's felt like she had to stay silent kind of during the whole Me Too era stuff, because she said that she really didn't want to detract anything from anybody else, but she's really realized over the past couple of years that what she went through wasn't right. She lost her virginity in a sexual assault thing and had other things throughout her life that she's had lots of traumas and stuff. So it kind of puts into perspective, like, she has this whole, like, Goody Two Shoes image and stuff from, you know, her Disney life and whatnot. But she's now kind of come out and said all of these things that have happened to her and all the people that have gotten away with it and have still been in films and other stuff and haven't really paid the repercussions that need to. So yeah.
She was in the hospital with an overdose and had 3 strokes and a heart attack.
Jesus Christ.
It had to recover her eyesight because she went blind from everything, and she can't even drive anymore. So just like kind of... It's dark, but it's a true light into, the ringer that is the mouse ears. A lot of what happens in the music industry, especially the way it horribly treats women and what it, like, sends to people who are, like, going through really, really real shit.
Exactly.
It doesn't make it better. It doesn't give them any support whatsoever. It just says, you're on your own, figure it out. And so she said that she realized the cold turkey approach didn't work for her, and so... She said, I realize if I don't allow myself some wiggle room, I go into the hard shit. So allowing myself to eat a Mexican pizza from Taco Bell, I found myself freedom from my eating disorder. But it was so all or nothing dogmatic with sobriety that I was just like, I don't know how to live with total balance in my life. And I think that's also an important thing to open up to with like eating disorders and things like that.
And not, yeah, just there's a lot of those binge disorders and stuff, because a lot of people, they try to quit cold turkey. They try to go like off the juice in total. And not many people have that willpower and everything. Not many people have that mindset to go into that. So a lot of the ways you slowly get off is you slowly get things out and you can splurge things that are here or there, but don't feel super guilty or beat yourself up over it, because then that's how you get into that whole cycle of, you know, ups and downs and whatnot. As someone who's a personal trainer, I see that all the time with people who have weight fluctuations and stuff, or who have a good week or a bad week. That's what I'm like, don't beat yourself over it, because we are all human at the end of the day and nobody is bloody perfect.
Yeah.
But it's more you open up about yourself, the more you get out instead of holding everything in, the better, because then you can get the weight lifted off your shoulders and you can get the help that most people very desperately need.
That was very well said. Now moving on to our last album of the week on a jam-packed week of Audio Face. Now Is a Long Time by Otzeki, 12 songs, 58 minutes long. This is Otzeki's, I believe, second or third album. And something we talked about them in
2018.
Yeah, 2018. This is their second album, yeah.
Okay.
They had released a lot of singles and EPs before this that I really loved. I remember one of my favorites in college was Touch. It was Touch, a really fun song. And then they released Binary Childhood, which is a really interesting thing. Second albums, as we talked about, are very difficult on Audio Face to like pull off and do. It was like a little bit experimental, but sort of seemed constrained by its own sound in its own way. And then now Is a Long Time has come here, and it's experimental just the way I like it.
And this is, as I was thinking of this, this is what modern music should sound like.
Wow.
This is what in this decade, in the 20s, this is what music is like. This is what's being pushed to get to the sound of
bold.
Mixing so many different sounds into one album and making it cohesive. So you're mixing, you know, experimental electronic, you're mixing some alternative influences, some indie influences, some spoken word stuff. There's so much that goes into this, but you confine it into ways that make it approachable to multiple styles of music listeners. And you make it cohesive throughout an entire hour long of an album, and it's just gorgeous. So the opening track, Sai So Shy, because that's So with three O's, or four O's, if I can read. And then it's like, it starts off there where it's kind of like this, almost like beatbox drums with a little bit of a tiny bit of like Atmosphere Peace style bass in the background, slowing it down. And then it just very airy. And it's just like, now is a long time, kind of going over and over the lyrics. But it's a great opening track because it kind of gets you sucked into what's going to be the theme of the album. But there is a lot of like surprises throughout it. After that, you got Sweet Sunshine, which then kind of picks up the tempo and stuff. You have these like gorgeous trip drums and like chimes going on in the background, get in the middle of it, and it's just crescendos up to this beautiful experimental piece of just, oh,
yeah. Of this, and Sweet Sunshine was the new single, and I love it. It's a very like eerie, creepy kind of thing.
Yeah,
but it keeps this sort of like, the thing I've liked about Otzeki's music is that usually they're 5-6 minute long pieces. The drums and the percussions in the background feels like, I don't know how else to put it. It's like you're at a tribal ritual and like you're keeping the drums going at a certain pace.
Exactly.
Just constantly
it's just like you're at like a fire dance or something where it's just a good pace. But then you have this billowing bass line that goes over and this electronic like just cloud of sound that kind of goes around it. And these powerful vocals that go with it. It's
like
just gorgeous.
Strong sort of like sensual vocals in the middle of it. It's just like such a really good vibe. I really like it. Sweet Sunshine really makes it pop. Mm-hmm. Another Sun's a nice sort of, it's like a classic Otzeki.
This sounds like an early Otzeki work where it's just really chill, laid back, like almost like Taiko style, where it's just kind of chill, nothing super fantastic, like nothing overly fantastic with that track. But then you have Maxwell's Demon, which is
That's something special with that track.
This is one of my songs of the year.
Quite what you expected, but it'll do for now. Yeah, it'll do somehow. It's not quite what you expected, but it'll do for now. Yeah, it'll do somehow.
I knew you'd like it.
I don't know how many I don't know how many times I've listened to this track. I like when I just pat it on, I was just like, holy fuck, this sounds like Thom Yorke. It's just the most Thom Yorke-y song anyone who's ever made that doesn't look like Willie Nelson. So, unbelievable.
All of the boxes are ticked.
It
flows nicely. It has builds and drops. It has different things that go through.
It's long as hell. It's 6 minutes, 48 seconds, which is a long fucking track.
It's a piece.
But everything in there is meant to be there. There's not one misplaced step. There's not one misspoken vocal. There's not one missed bass line. It's just, oh, Sean Bean.
That's what we like.
That's a fucking just like fish me out, reel him up. Got him hooked right there.
Yes.
This is on repeat.
Yeah.
Friday.
So another thing I'll say about this record is that it is very well spaced and put out. Absolutely. Because the album goes through phases and sounds. And I think Another Sun a little bit, but definitely Maxwell's Demon kicks off this nice meaty chunk of the middle of the album.
Yes.
Where things are nice and experimental. You have the like sort of soft drums that are like kicking in the back and forth, like adding a little bit of like punchy, like glitchiness in the back. Not too much to be a little bit overbearing, but just enough to feel like punk and cyber in those ways, in other words that imply technology that are from the 90s.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff here where it's so futuristic, but it's not too futuristic, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's enough
very modern.
It's extremely modern to the point where it's everything where you're utilizing all of the tools that you have at your disposal to make great music and great sounds, which is hard to do. And it's just two cousins that are doing it. That's it.
Yeah.
Just two dudes with some long hair.
Two bros.
Two dudes being dudes. After that, you've got No Views, which then it's similar to Maxwell's Demon, but more up-paced, and this is more of a dancey track compared to it, because the vocals are really mixed and kind of go around in a bubble and stuff, almost like Twist from Thom Yorke, if you know that track.
Unsunk is, like, this is still the meaty, experimental, fun part of the album, but it feels like it's going to be slower, but then it develops into a bigger, like, fun thing.
Exactly.
That actually reminds me a little bit of Muse of Simulation Theory in some ways. In a little bit, like, sort of, like, sort of dystopian.
It's like the almost like an 80s dystopia theme, but you know, they modernized it a lot more than Simulation Theory.
It sounds like a Hot Chip remix of Panic Station.
If you're a
big music head, you'll know exactly what that sounds like.
That's hilarious, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's very good, exactly. Slaps. Used to Wonder, You Continue, and I believe this is where, if I remember correctly, this is where the album begins to slow down a little
bit.
Yes. Yeah.
It slows down, and this is when you get more into the really deep percussion styles of Otsuki, which I enjoy, because you get that just gorgeous drumline beat within just like a pretty simple keyboard theme of just doing chords back and forth, and it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, letting the synthesizers like ride a little bit through certain notes. It's really nice.
And then Familiar Feeling goes after that, and that is that more of that almost like house-inspired style of electronic music where it's like mixing Hot Chip with Tycho, basically.
Yeah.
Where you have like a groovy upbeat, but then everything for the production is crisp and to the point, and there's not one misstep with it.
Familiar feeling, softest touch upon your skin, strangest love that you can trust, everything inside of us. Familiar feeling, softest touch upon your skin, strangest love that you can trust, everything inside
there's a certain point where like almost all this like music drops out and he's singing, and it's such a powerful moment in that. It's like a really, like, there are very few male vocalists, Thom Yorke may be included in this, Damon Albarn, when he's doing solo work, maybe included in this, where it's just like so melancholy and dark and like powerful. You can tell the emotion in the voice. It's very, very good. Mm-hmm. Excellent job there.
You have Leave Yourself Alone.
No, you skipped Emotional Retail.
I skipped Emotional Retail. Whoops.
Which I also thought you might like.
No, that's right. I did skip that one. That's the one I do like a lot because that's more of that, like, how do I explain the sound of that? It's very Tom Yorke-y again, where it's like, it sounds like Nigel Godrich produced this, but he didn't. So it's like someone else can make this stuff. Like,
yeah.
Which is the thing. So it has like, I call
like
it like Bubble
Adams for Peace and Junior Boys, but just like very experimental.
Extremely experimental. Because I call it Bubble Bass. Because it's like, but it's really, it hits your eardrums in a way that it's hard to explain unless you have like earphones in when you're listening to it, but it literally does that throughout the track, which is very unique. This reminded me a lot of Nigel Godrich's production, and actually their vocals do remind me a bit of Junior Boys, come to think of that now.
Yeah,
because almost like Big Black Coat, where it's going out and then almost out to sea, if you can picture that in a voice, and then coming back and within the tide of water.
You continue the bubble bass and Leave Yourself Alone, which we're now at.
Yes. Which that is like straight bubble bass song. Yeah. Which just like the whole time is which I fucking love.
Love it. At this point, used to wonder to Emotional Retail kind of bring you in. Well, Used to Wonder and Familiar Feeling are like a really good, slower, lighter songs, which are great. You don't want the album to be always in a thing all the time. Mm-hmm. But Emotional Retail, then Leave Yourself Alone, start to drop you down into this like, you know, nice, use pilot speak, a nice smooth landing of the album.
You hit the direct middle of it. You don't skip. You don't lock up your brakes or anything. You're right on the money. And the
baby's still sleeping.
Exactly. The instructor's like, damn, how smooth.
Yeah.
No crosswind. You called ATIS and they're like, when's that 2 kilometers off your west? You're like, yes.
Yeah.
And you're good.
Really nice album ender. It reminds me of the way Adams for Peace, Amok, ended.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what song it was, but just like this, even like, yes, it's a note playing lightly through here with some drums that are just plucking through in the background and a little bit of singing. Yep. It's just a really nice way to end the album.
It's an incredible album. I knew I liked Otsuki before. Like, I've listened to their stuff like off and on every once. Like every 3-4 months, an Otsuki track will pop on. Listen to them for a week. But then with this album, this is something I'm going to be listening to a lot this year.
No, I
this is gorgeous.
I knew I had gotten some sauce when I discovered Touch in college, mm-hmm. and I just like was checking on them. I was all right.
Well, because the last album that we reviewed 3 years ago, I thought was okay, but it wasn't anything that I particularly enjoyed too much. But this is
we're cooking with gas.
But this is just now like propane for propane
accessories.
This is just everything I love in modern music.
Yeah,
is here. I can't wait for Junior Boys this year because apparently it's supposed to be releasing some shit this year.
Which no way.
Yeah, I thought Bam tweeted about that a while ago. Which, if that's the case, I'm pretty sure they are. And if we get this plus some Junior Boys, then it's just like the Bible's been dropped. Oh shit, how's Skeeter get a gun?
Wow, that's an instant Bam crossover episode.
We might need
to get Caesar into Junior Boys.
One day.
But anyways, arbitrary scale this week. Disgrace, All Right, Shock Jocks. I'm going to give this Dave Rubin talking about how grateful he is to live in California so he can go through with his surrogacy birth. meanwhile, he was talking about how much he wanted to move to Texas Nashville because the liberals in California were giving these mask mandates. It's because, like, here's the thing with Dave Rubin. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
This really is Rave Dubin, where it's just...
It's maple syrup. It's so smooth.
It's making the legendary Michael Brooks just, like, roll over in his grave, laugh. Like, I can hear that shit all the way from New York. Like, I can hear that laugh of just everything that's going on of, why do they have friends?
Red Michael Brooks left his best.
Oh, left his best, baby. Okay. Woo! And now
quick
hits.
Okay.
So you want to hear a star fuck? Because I got a star book for you, baby. So Snoop Doggy Dogg, Ice Cube, Too Short, and E-40 team up as Mount Westmore, releasing an album in April. What the hell is their song going to be called?
The Mount Rushmore of Uncle Rock. That's
that
for
is
sure.
Like, what is it going to be called? Like, I don't know.
I got to read.
Blow the something.
Too Short revealed. I get a call during the early part of quarantine from E-40 and Ice Cube going, man, we feel like we should do an album. Me, you, it's E-40, Cube, Too Short, and Snoop Dogg. I'm like, E-40 and Too Short from the Bay, Snoop Dogg and Cube from LA. We got this West Coast Foundation. We're there like, fuck it, let's do it. First of all, major Pacific Northwest erasure here. Mm-hmm. And secondly, listen, fine. This is going to make the old heads and lowriders fine. And I'm in the West Coast. Like, I have to be like, fine, okay with it. But it's like, no, we don't need this.
This is going to just be hilarious.
Sure. I mean, would I rather review this or Lana Del Rey?
I would much rather go into an E-40 album than I would Lana Del Rey by far.
Yeah, I would love to hear Family Movies. We put on the gangster rap hat again. But... We'll wait for that later. And of course, because we always like to end this debaucherous show on a fun note.
Yes.
It appears that... Listen, I really did not want to talk about this story about Quavo and Saweetie breaking up. Because it was like...
It's just terrible.
It was really disgusting the way it was reported. Shade Room was like, oh, they're not following each other on Instagram anymore. Eyes emoji. And then, like, yeah, it came out because, like, people were talking on social media and it became, all trashy. I hate that all aspect. I hate that aspect of music culture. Not really a big fan of it. But...
But Quavo
responded to Saweetie's single status when Saweetie was just like, yeah, I'm breaking up. I'm single now. I'm like, because Quavo cheated on me multiple times and I was tired of being cheated like that. Quavo responded by saying, I know you want to make this into a show, so I'll play my part just this one time. I don't normally put my business out there, especially my personal life. I feel the need to address this. So there are no false narratives. And if you're ASMRing the podcast, you can hear me rubbing my hands together because I'm about to drop a banger. March 19th, 2021, 2:45 p.m. Quavo tweeted, I had love for you and disappointed you, did all that. You are not the woman I thought you were. I wish you nothing but the best.
Praying hands emoji.
Quavo, you have just been noted for the Daystar Peterson Noted Little Bitch Award.
You were definitely top of the charts of that Noted Little Bitch Award right there. Just swoop.
I'm disappointed that you broke up with me after I cheated on you.
That's
That's some Migos shit right there.
That is like, when is Takeoff going up?
But between Offset's hoe shit, Takeoff's rape charges.
Oh, fuck, that's right.
And Quavo's shit here. We have
the trifecta we have
need
Migos.
To bring Migos
we got
back.
Migos. Culture, culture, culture.
Bring back Culture 3. Make it the same week of Lana Del Rey's album. And let's end the podcast.
And then that's it. That's it. And then I can enjoy music again.
Oh my God. These people are so bad. But this has been Audio Face. Thank you very much for listening and keeping an open mind. This has been episode 179. If you're interested in this podcast, as you very much should be, you should make sure you're following us at all the social media platforms we're on. That's Twitter at AudioFacePod. That's Instagram at AudioFacePod. And that's YouTube at youtube.com/AudioFacePod. Our website's audioface.show. You can find all of our podcasts there. You can dig into all of our really cool reviews. And you want to make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so you get new episodes as they drop on Mondays and our bonus episodes, which are fire this year. Especially since you told me Junior Boy is coming out. That's what I mean. I started this podcast in a different kind of passion mood, and now I'm in a better mood. Awesome. Sean can be found on Twitter and Instagram at SW Spars. I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web and Instagram at Dan from the Internet. Again, check out Power Report. I think it's a very important episode to listen to, and it's good topics and conversation for if you didn't get enough politics from this music podcast. Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you again very soon. Cheers.
Bye.